Okay.
So I did this, I ran through a series of compounds. I used, you know, ketones, aldehydes, carboxylic acids, and so on, hydroxyl compounds. And I found that acetic acid exchanged very slowly, but trichloroacetic did pretty well. And aldehydes exchanged, depending on what aldehyde was, the rate of different. I later found that out. But I found that acetone exchanged at a fairly nice rate. So I reported all this to Yuri. He said, why don't you investigate the exchange of acetone and water in the vapor state? So I tried it, and I found indeed that it did exchange. I did it at 80 degrees, and I had enough water vapor there, and acetone was vaporized. And they did exchange slowly. Then I did it in liquid state, and I found it exchanged at a much faster rate, at room temperature it exchanged. It didn't have to go up in temperature. And anyhow, I realized that if I did that, I could investigate acid catalysis and basic catalysis and so on. So I went to Yuri and I said, yes, it exchanges in vapor state, but it also exchanges at quite a nice measurable rate in liquid state. He shook his head and said, I said, I prefer to study this reaction in the liquid state. He said, I understand what goes on in the gas state, and I understand what goes on in the solid state, but the liquid state is a complete mystery to me. And he said, I don't like to do experiments where I have no theory to guide me. So I kept at it. I said, you know, it really would be much more interesting, though, because I could investigate acid catalysis and basic catalysis. He said, well, if that's what you want to do, why don't you go and speak to Professor Hammond? He knows all about what happens in the liquid state. So I did. I went to Hammond, and Hammond was very helpful. He had a fantastic encyclopedic memory of references. And he told me to look up references on hydration of keto groups and so on. And he could tell you, Transactions of Faraday Society, such and such a volume, such and such a page. It was amazing.
Well, he must have been writing his book at that time.
Probably. His book?
Published in 1940.
Yes, yeah. He was working on it. But he really knew all these references. In fact, my thesis problem was in his book. The results of it.
It's a good classical physical organic problem, that's right.
Yes, and I was very proud of that at the time, that in Hammond's book my thesis was quoted. Anyhow, Hammond thought it was a good problem to study, and so Yuri didn't bother me anymore. He said, okay, if you want to do that, go ahead. He was very permissive. He had a very interesting philosophy. He thought that graduate students should be left on their own, but postdocs were there to do what he wanted them to do.
He was paying their way.
Well, not that. He didn't want that. He thought that was the way to train graduate students, to let them sort of sink or swim.
I see.
You see. But as far as postdocs were concerned, they had already done their graduate work. They were there to carry out research that he was personally very interested in.
As the problem proceeded, did he offer you advice, or did you?
Let me tell you. As the problem proceeded, I needed the mass spectrometer started working. And I needed a method for analyzing. It was much better to do it by mass spec than this other thing. First of all, it would take less material. Secondly, it didn't have that a feature that you might be diluting the oxygen by purifying the water. And so he devised the method for doing that when I had to do it.
Yuri did.
Yes. I was doing acetone water exchange, and he said, I'll tell you what you can do. You can take the water and exchange it with CO2. And that way, since we know what the equilibrium constant is of that reaction, you'll know what the concentration was in the CO2. You have to measure the amount of CO2 and the amount of water, but still it was enough because you could do a whole bunch of samples at a time. And I studied as a function of time to find out how long it took to equilibrate with shaking and so on, because it's a two-phase reaction after all. And also I figured out how to get the CO2 out. You didn't want any water in the mass spectrometer, that's deadly. Anyhow, the mass spectrometer was working then, and I started using this water that was lighter than the normal, and the mass spectrometer worked very well for analyzing the CO2, 18 over 16. And so he supplied that method. There's just one thing. Otherwise, he really wasn't terribly interested until I got it all finished, and I wrote it up. And when I wrote it up, he said to me, I wrote it up as a paper, because at that time at Columbia, in order to get a PhD, you had to present them with 150 printed copies of your paper. Or you didn't get your degree. Now, if you were in science, you had the option of publishing it and using a reprint with two special pages, a title page and a CV at the end, to meet the requirements of this printed copy. My father was in the printing business, and I asked him how much it would cost to print that thesis. It had eight figures in it. At that time, it was very expensive to do figures, because they actually had to make engravings and things. He told me it would cost him $1,000, and $1,000 in those days was one hell of a lot of money.
Happy to pay for a good paying job. Yeah.
So I decided that I would write it up as a paper, and then I would present the reprint. So I wrote it up as a paper, and I gave it to Yuri to read, and I had written Cohen and Yuri as the author. So he said to me, you know, I always wonder why my students put my name on their paper. Do they think I contributed something, or do they think it will give the paper more prestige? I said, a little of both. He was satisfied with that, and he left it. But then he read it, and he was so intrigued with the equations I had written and the mechanisms, that he got interested in this, and he started writing kinetic equations and solving them himself.
Right. Yes.
It was really very interesting that once he saw the results, even though he shied away from the liquid state, he got very interested in the analysis data. Anyhow,
I mean, it's a very organic paper too.
Yes.
It's really a foundation paper in organic chemistry. So.
Well, I think I told you it's still being referred to in the citation index. It's published in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
Had a long life. So I must say, it may have something to do with the method. I don't know. Though the method is superseded now by other methods. Nevertheless, there are still citations of this paper.
I mean, the mechanistic implications were
foundations. Well, what I proved, of course, since what had been done was the enolization of acetone for the exchange of hydrogen with deuterium, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the rate of that was known from the deuterium studies.
Mm-hmm.
I showed that this was not the mechanism in this case, that it must be a hydration because of the fact that this rate was much faster than the enolization rate.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, so I finally finished it, but a lot of things happened on the way, needless to say. For one thing, I had no financial support, and then they had this student aid program where you could earn $40 a month if you did work for it. And Yuri said, I'm going to get that for you, and the work I want you to do is your own thesis. So I got $40 a month in my third year, for the academic year.
Now, all this while you're still living at home.
Oh, yes. doing at home, but I had run out of money.
Mm-hmm.
I had saved enough money on that job, even with the salary I was getting, to pay my tuition. I didn't have to pay room and board, but I had to buy my own clothes, and I had to have, you know, money for lunch and for coffee and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I saved, I think, about $1,000 on that salary in a little over 2 years, and then I worked that summer again, and I earned some money. Well, anyhow, what I want to tell you is that Yuri was the only member of that faculty, in my opinion, who really cared about the underdog, namely the graduate students. At the end of that year, when I had been getting $40 a month, he knew it was only to be academic year, and one day he said to me, "Miss Cohen," he was always very told for it, no one called me Miss Cohen, "what are you doing for money?" He said, "I know you're not getting this $40 a month anymore." I said, "Well, I'm borrowing it." He said, "Did you know, ever since I've gotten the Nobel Prize, I've wanted to help my students. He said, why don't you let me lend you some money? And someday, when you have a good job, you can pay me back." So I thanked him, and I said that was very nice of him, but that I was borrowing from my family, and I felt more comfortable doing that. But can you imagine a professor today, or for that matter even then, doing something like that? There aren't many.
Occasionally I'll run across somebody, but you're right, not many.
No, he really was concerned. I don't know how much you know about his background, but he came from a very poor background.
Not very much. I just know that he was Midwest or
that's
or
right. And he almost didn't go to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the town in which he lived didn't have a high school, and he had to go away out of town to go to high school. And he said he couldn't have done it except that an uncle of his died and left him $300. So he managed to go to high school. So he still remembers that. And he really was very caring about the graduate students.
He never did teach as a graduate student?
Never.
How big was Yuri's group?
He had about 3 postdocs and about 4 students, graduate students.
Did you have interaction with the other?
Oh, sure. We were all very friendly. And
who were some of the people who were in this group at that time?
The graduate students?
The people who
Well, one was T. Ivan Taylor, and one was a fellow by the name of Alec Mills. He became the director of research of Fuji Products in Pennsylvania, in Marcus Hook, I guess. And Taylor, as I told you, became a professor at Columbia. Now, there was another fellow by the name of Miller. He was doing the spectroscopic work. I don't know what happened to him. He was the 4th student.
Who were the people you were closest to? Who did you communicate with?
I mean, scientifically? Well, I was very friendly with all these fellow graduate students.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you friendly with people outside your own group? I don't know who would have been there at the time.
Oh, sure. I knew a lot of graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not intimately.
Yeah, no. I mean, the people you
would
have
worked
with. Sure.
For example, I knew a Hammett graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a taste of a very unpleasant thing that happens in science from one of Lanier's graduate students. After I set up this pull and drop method, he was working with deuterium, and he wanted to use that method. So he came over, and I showed him my setup, which was a replication of Krogh and Ussing. It was nothing original with me. It was a very accurate method because the pipette was so good. It had been machined by a very good machinist that Yuri had working for him. And the only contribution which I made was that I found out that they had done the calculation incorrectly. They took the density to be equivalent to the time of fall, and actually it's the rate of fall. And I pointed out to him that that was an error, that they could have used reciprocals of the time, not the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went and made a setup that was a 10 times less sensitive because he had a homemade pipette, which he greased. It wasn't an automatic pipette. It was, anyhow, it was 10 times less sensitive than the one I had set up. And he published it and pointed out that these people had made a mistake in their calculation. But you know, when I saw that, I was so horrified that he would do this to me. But I went to Yuri and said, look at the student of Lamaze. He went and published this thing that I told him. And the only new thing in his paper is this correction of the calculation. So he said, calm down. This is the first time it's happened. It's only the last. He was fairly cynical.
Yeah, yes,
and he assured me it happened to him too. So, but I knew several of Hammett's graduate students because their interests were really closest to mine.
Who is there? I don't.
There was a fellow by the name of Roberts.
Irving Roberts. Right.
Do you know him?
I don't know him, but there's a very famous paper by Roberts and Kimball that everybody thinks is written by Jack Roberts, but is written by this Roberts. It's on the bromonium ion.
Really? But,
yes.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting thing about that. When I finished, Yuri couldn't find me a job. He and I both went to an ACS meeting, and he came back, and as I told you before, he said really very sadly, he said, nobody wants you. And so he offered me a job, and he asked me what kind of problems I wanted to work on. And I had gone and read a book on organic reactions, and I found 10 reactions that you could study with this OAT.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were so many.
Right.
It was an untouched field.
Yeah.
So I started studying these 10 reactions, mechanisms that could be, at least the bond cleavage could be found out. And he just sat there with his. He said, you know, you're the first graduate student I've had who has some ideas after they finish the thesis. I said, yes, Miss. I said, graduate student training does tend to lead to sterility, doesn't it? Anyhow, he offered me a job as postdoc, and I was pleased to do it because I really had an opportunity. I had an open field with no competition. He was the only one who had any OAT. So it was a golden opportunity to do a lot of these reactions. And so I accepted. And a few weeks later, Rittenberg and Schoenheimer got in touch with me and told me they had a job for me with Vignon doing biochemistry, using deuterium as a tracer. Well, this wasn't my first contact with them. They used to come down to Columbia quite frequently because they used to get their isotopes from Yuri and also to talk to him.
Rittenberg had worked with Yuri?
Yes, he had gotten his degree with Yuri a couple of years before I did. But I had known him in the 1931-32 period when I was a graduate student. And he used to come down, we used to talk, and he used to tell me what he was doing, and Schoenheimer used to tell me what he was doing, and so on. And it all sounded very interesting. Besides, this was a real job. I mean, it wasn't just out of, you know, because I had nothing else.
Right.
Sort of thing. So I went to Yuri, and we talked about it, and he advised me strongly to take it. He said, it's much better not to stay in the department in which you got your degree, because no one will ever look on you as anything but graduate student. And he also thought this was a very interesting field to get into, so I decided to do it. And this fellow Robert, Irving Roberts, had been pounding the pavement, he finished his degree about 6 months before I did, and he had been pounding the pavement looking for a job, and he had no job, and I thought he was good. So I said to Yuri, look, why don't you hire Irving Roberts? He will be very interested in doing these OAT problems, and I'm sure he'll do it well. He's a student of Hammett. And so that's how Roberts got to do that work that he did on OAT, which he did, what? He studied, verification or something, I've forgotten.
I don't remember what he did with URI, but I did. Mm-hmm. I guess I know he worked for URI.
Yes, he did, and that's how he happened to work for URI, because I suggested to a URI that he hire him instead of me, since I had decided to take the other job.
You had a pretty good rapport with URI. I mean, you could.
Oh yeah, for sure. I had a very good rapport with URI. I can tell you a lot of stories about me and URI. I mean, he used to tell me all kinds of things. And some of them, you see, this was all during the heyday of the Nazis, and there was a very political atmosphere. Everyone was aware of it, certainly at the university. And he had a postdoc who was a Nazi, but URI didn't know it. In fact, no one knew it except me. He used to tell me. He showed me. He was a Dutchman, and he used to get the illegal Nazi newspapers from Holland. And he used to belong to a group of German exchange students at Columbia who had been sent over by the Nazi government. And they had some kind of club or something to which he belonged. And when there would be, Fuhrer would make a speech, he would tell me that the media in this country were very much, very unfair to Hitler. And they hadn't done justice in translating his speech, and that he and his friends were putting out the correct translation and passing it around. He was a charming fellow, by the way, he really was.
Good.
And after he left, I happened to mention to one of the professors that he was a Nazi. He said, how could he be? He was such a nice fellow. Anyhow, URI discovered anti-Semitism. He didn't know about it up to this point. He really didn't. And at one point, he said to me, you know, he said, why don't you go out to the Middle West? Did I tell you this story? Why don't you go out to the Middle West and marry a non-Jew and forget that you're a Jew? And then you won't have these problems. So I said, has it ever occurred to you that maybe I don't want to forget that I'm a Jew? And he was genuinely surprised that one would want to get rid of such a handicap. However, he learned a great deal during as the years went by. As you know, he was on the board of governors of the Technion and Haifa, for example, and so on. And he was very good friends with Ravi. They were very good friends, and in fact, Ravi has related this, and there was an article on a profile of Ravi Bunsen in the New Yorker magazine. And Ravi has personally told me this story, and it was in print there that URI got money because he was a Nobel laureate. There weren't many around in those days. He's the third American to get it in chemistry. And so various foundations, like the Carnegie Foundation, he was the only one who had postdocs, you understand. Though later, Hammett got Frank Westheimer as a postdoc. But at the time that I was a student, URI was the only one who had postdocs.
But Hammett didn't support Westheimer.
Probably
Westheimer
not.
Had a national research fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was until probably after the war that Hammett had enough money to support any postdoc.
Well, URI did. He had three or four
mm-hmm.
at any given time. And what was I telling you? I forgot what I was
about. Oh, about the story of
Robbie. Yes. So he had money, which most of the other professors did not. The university used to support everyone very well, at a low level, I shall
yes.
say, but not enough to support students or postdocs. But he used to get money, even without asking for it sometimes. And so one day, he went over to Robbie and said, look, I think the work you're doing is great. I just got $10,000. Why don't you take $5,000 of it to do what you like with? And Robbie said that meant the world to him because he wanted to buy a magnet and he could now, and so on and so forth. So that story is in print if you want to look at it. But URI was genuinely interested in science and seeing science progress, and he he did his best with everyone that he could to see. Mm-hmm. And he had good judgment about, for example, supporting Robbie. Because Robbie at that time was a rather junior member of the physics department.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't been there terribly long when this incident occurred.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a little bit about some of the other people in the department. Victor Lemaire was another physical chemist, and he got a lot of students. But he did have some bad interactions. I just don't know anything about him.
Well, I don't know what the source of it was, but among the students, the scuttlebutt was that he and Urey didn't get along at all, and that they flunked each other's students at their final orals. You know, students tell such stories. Whether it was true or not, I don't know. And then I remember the day that it was announced that Urey got the Nobel Prize, the story went around that Lemaire stayed home sick that day. You know, students make up such stuff.
Well, I don't think he got along well with Hammett either, but I don't know. I thought maybe you knew more about that than I did.
I don't know, except that
Louis was too much of a gentleman to say anything about it, but he sort of...
Well, Urey never said anything either.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know it from them, but I think that both of them were really so much better scientists than Lemaire was. I remember one time when Otto Halper from NYU was giving a colloquium, and he put an equation on the board, and Lemaire asked what that equation was, and he told him it was the Grunewald-Lemaire extension of the Debye-Huckel theory. With great joy he told him that. But Lemaire did very nice work, actually. He had very good students. But he did not have a reputation of being a great mind, and I don't think he was. For example, he stopped me in the hall and asked me how my work was going one day. And I said that he knew what I was studying, this exchange reaction. I said that I had found out that it was general acid catalyzed, and he said, that's just what I would expect. And a month or two later, he met me again, and he asked me how things were going. And I said that I had investigated base catalysis, and I found that it was not general base catalyzed, it was hydroxyline catalyzed. And he said, that's just what I would expect. That I remember. But personally, I never found him objectionable. I mean, I didn't have respect for him. I don't think any of the students did as they had for Hammett and Urey. But nevertheless, he did nice work, and he had some very good students. He had one very good student by the name of Greenspan.
I was going to